Welcome to Thoughts from Home, your conservation podcast from the National Conservation Training Center. We're located along the Potomac River in historic Shepherdstown, West Virginia, and are home to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy.
So hello, y'all. On this episode, we'll be talking about our Nature-Based Solutions Workshop that's going on here at the National Conservation Training Center this week. It's March the 20th of 2024. We've been going for a few days now. Today's the third day of the workshop, and I'm here with a couple of our Maintenance and Infrastructure Fellows Program Climate Fellows. But first, my name is Jake Greenfield. I'm a course leader and fish and wildlife biologist, and I focus most of my time on climate change and decision analysis courses. And why don't y'all go ahead and introduce yourselves?
Hi, everyone. My name is Matthias Benko. I am one of the Maintenance and Infrastructure Climate Fellows. I'm originally from Indiana, but I now reside on Mason Neck National Wildlife Refuge.
And hello, everyone. I'm Lyric. I am a biologist and a climate adaptation fellow working on nature-based solutions and some communication efforts.
Thanks, y'all. So nature-based solutions, you know, there was a Vox article that came out that said that the messaging on nature-based solutions isn't always hitting home. So why don't you tell us what nature-based solutions are? Lyric, do you mind taking this one?
Sure. Yeah. Nature-based solutions are really those actions to protect and sustainably manage ecosystems, but not just for the benefit of nature, but also the benefit of humans. And that's really the key aspect of this. It's intentionally trying to benefit human communities.
Do you want to add anything to that, Matthias?
I think Lyric nailed it. What we're really trying to nail down is that it's not just ecological restoration as usual. It's those human aspects as well, so including social variables too.
Yeah, we heard on the first day of the conference that sometimes here at the Fish and Wildlife Service, we do what's called a random acts of restoration. So our full mission is working with others to conserve, protect, and enhance fish, wildlife, and plants and their habitats for a continuing benefit of the American people. It seems to me like we're already benefiting people. So what are these co-benefits and how does that differ from just our normal operations?
Right. So the co-benefits of nature-based solutions are the positive benefits related to the reduction or avoided loss of greenhouse gases, right? So these nature-based solutions help us deal with climate adaptation, so what's going on now, but they also help us with carbon. So uptaking carbon is one of the most important ways that we can deal with climate change because carbon dioxide is a very potent greenhouse gas. So we really want these nature-based solutions to own in on these co-benefits to maximize our fight against climate change.
So, one of the things we saw on Monday was a big banner that was brought over by the manager of Neil Smith National Wildlife Refuge, and it had a big blue stem grass. And if you look at it, the grass above ground is about 6 feet tall, and you had 8 feet of roots. And that's a lot of carbon that gets sequestered, a lot more than currently we can do with technology. What's one of those big barriers to implementing nature-based solutions? Is it communications? Tell me what it is.
I think one of the key issues is the messaging. Like you said, we've done some of this a lot, and some people think that why do we need to add something else different? But I think the key to nature-based solutions is adding in the human aspect. We want to make sure we're being intentional about the human communities around us as we're implementing these nature-based solution projects. And while they are practices that we've done, they're a little bit different because we want to think holistically about the restoration that we're doing.
And Matthias, what about funding? How are we paying for nature-based solutions right now?
So funding is always going to be a hard question when it comes to restoration activities, especially when we want to do large-scale projects or landscape-scale projects like nature-based solutions. So we really look towards the big pots of funding that come in. So they usually come in through disaster funding, like your Hurricane Sandy. A lot of money came in and practitioners on the ground were able to incorporate nature-based solutions into their projects. But more recently, the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law and the Inflation Reduction Act provided a lot of money for ecosystem restoration. And within the Inflation Reduction Act in particular, there was more opportunity for us to implement criteria that incorporated nature-based solutions into the projects, right? So all of our ecological practitioners, these biologists who are going in and doing projects, planting the materials needed, they had to sit down and do those criteria that they normally do for a project, but then also think about how is this going to affect people? How is this going to affect the community surrounding the refuges? Because at the end of the day, the refuges isn't just about the refuge themselves and that land. It impacts the people who live nearby and who visit them all the time. the National Wildlife Refuge System has millions of visitors every year, and everyone is impacted by, in some way, shape, or form, by a wildlife refuge.
Very nice. Thank you. So let's shift gears a little bit and talk about what we're doing here this week. So not only are Matthias and Lyric fellows working on projects within the Fish and Wildlife Service, they were also some of the core members of the organizing team for this workshop. So they had a hand in everything from choosing our speakers, our partners that came, that are coming tomorrow, our panelists, and everything that went into it. So why have we convened this workshop, and what's the purpose of it? I mean, why can't we just send an email?
I think the purpose of this workshop is really to get people together in one space to talk about nature-based solutions. We really wanted to get all the programs of the Fish and Wildlife and our partners together to have this conversation of how we can best implement nature-based solutions. And I think that having this in-person experience is fostering different dialogues that we hadn't thought about. So I think this is a really unique opportunity to get everybody together and learn more about what nature-based solutions are and how to best implement them and really get some work done in the advancement of nature-based solutions and climate change.
Matthias, one of the first times that I knew or that I saw that the federal government was working hard on nature-based solutions was actually when the White House released their roadmap for implementing nature-based solutions. Duke University, the Nicholas School at Duke University, collaborated with the Department of the Interior to put out our own nature-based solutions roadmap that includes many, many different strategies for all different ecosystem types. And why isn't that enough? Why isn't it enough that a policy comes out of the White House or we do a roadmap? Why can't we just hand that to field biologists and expect that that's going to get done? Is there some other step that needs to happen?
So policy is always going to be one thing, but implementation of that policy is another. It's really hard to look at just a piece of writing, a DM, a departmental manual chapter, or a roadmap and be able to pick up on it and just go out into the field and follow it exactly. You're going to need help and guidance. And that's what we're trying to do here, right? We're trying to provide people from across the Fish and Wildlife Service, from all the different regions, from all the different offices, from the field to regions to headquarters. We're providing them the tools to understand what's going on in this policy, and then they can go back out and apply it. It's really important to have the help, right? This is a team effort. We can't not act together.
Yeah, that really resonates. One of the things we're trying to do here at the National Conservation Training Center is focus our learning on the learner itself. So doing learner-centered learning and some newer ways of adult education and training. And I was thinking about that a lot on Monday when the directorate was out here talking to us about what we can do with these concepts. And a lot of it had to do with making sure we involve the community early, highlighting those co-benefits so that they know that even though a project may take a little bit longer or cost a little bit more money up front, the overall benefits over time are going to be a lot better. So do you have any advice or thoughts about how we share these stories with our community members and how we communicate nature-based solutions, Lyric?
No, I think that's a great question, and we definitely need to think more about how to engage the community early and often and make sure we're getting a consistent message out. I think that's really key of, hey, we're doing this project and it might take this long time, but we are really trying to do something that in the long run will benefit you. So I think making sure we're listening to them as we're going out into the communities and taking in their considerations and listening to their priorities and kind of trying to integrate those into what we're trying to do and make sure we're relating to them that we're working for them.
Some of the other bureaus in the Department of the Interior are here with us this week, and they're engaging on nature-based solutions as well. So more to come from them. Let's bring it away from nature-based solutions a little bit, and let's talk about one of the biggest challenges in the Fish and Wildlife Service, and really across government in a lot of ways, which is that a huge portion of our workforce is going to be eligible for retirement in the next few years. So one of the things we're trying to do is figure out ways that we can attract and retain young, smart, and focused and motivated young people. Can either one of you describe the fellowship that you got and started working with Fish and Wildlife Service on?
Sure. So Lyric and I are a part of the inaugural class of Maintenance and Infrastructure Fellows. And this is a program that is through the service's Infrastructure Management Division. And it's not just us, the Climate Change Fellows, there's a bunch of different cohorts. There's data operations and facility maintenance. There's maintenance itself, engineering, hydrology, just to name a few of them. So it's a program that's appealing to professionals or people of our age who are looking to start our careers in many different disciplines and areas. And we heard about it through happenstance on Google. So your local search engine is always going to be your best friend when you're looking for jobs as an aspiring college graduate. So the application process is very straightforward. You fill out a form, and then if you're a match, they contact you. You do a couple of interviews, and then you get placed. So it's been a fantastic opportunity to learn about the Fish and Wildlife Service and how the service operates. But it's also giving us the skills and the tools necessary to take what we learn to start a promising career in conservation, or for myself and Lyric, a career in climate change or environmental change.
Very cool. So what types of opportunities have come out of it, Lyric? Is there a mentorship component? What types of professional development have you done? And I think probably the biggest question is, does it help you get a job at the federal government?
So there is a mentorship component. Every fellow is paired with a mentor during orientation, and you really get to know your mentor over the course of your fellowship and build that relationship. And I've had a really great experience with my mentor. We really gotten to connect on a personal level and a professional level as well. And she's been really great and helped me out with some job opportunities and some tips and tricks. So that's been a great experience.
What about professional development, Matthias?
So being here at NCTC this week is a fabulous professional development opportunity, and we are able to go to different seminars and workshops, whether that be at NCTC or beyond, at different conferences that apply to the work that we're doing. We have that flexibility within our fellowship to do that, which is great. We have a professional development stipend, and it's great that this program isn't just about learning and training to be a good employee and getting familiar with the workforce. It's also helping us develop skills that are going to be necessary for here and beyond.
Let's ask the big question that I'm sure any person that's about to graduate from college is thinking about more than anything else. Obviously, graduation parties, but other than that, will this help me get a job?
Yes. They've designed the program as such so that you get a Public Lands Corp certification at the end of it, or after you reach a certain amount of hours. And with this, you can apply to DOI Bureau jobs, and this is good for 2 years, and it's a non-competitive hiring authority. And it has helped some of the other fellows in the cohort land jobs already. So it's been great.
Well, fingers crossed for the both of y'all. I know you're all about to finish up. I can tell you from what I've heard this week that you've been very impressive to a lot of the people. And there's a lot of hiring managers that came here to this conference because whenever we do something where we're really trying to integrate a policy into our operations, that takes a lot of experience. And from everything that I've heard from this fellowship program, they learn just as much from y'all as you learn from them. So very, very impressed. All right, so one last question about the fellowship. So did y'all come out of a graduate program? Did you come out of an undergraduate program? Is it restricted to any of those?
It depends on the cohort that you get placed in. So some of the cohorts require a college or a higher level degree. The maintenance fellowships do not. From my personal experience, I just graduated last spring. I got this opportunity about 3 weeks after I graduated, so I'm fresh out of college.
Cool. What about you, Lyric?
Yep. So for me, I just finished grad school and was looking for something and very early in my career and wanted to get it started. So.
Great. So I myself was part of a different fellowship program. I was a presidential management fellow, which is one of the fellowship programs for recent graduate school graduates as well. So definitely, if any of our listeners out there are about to graduate from graduate school, check that one out. Check out the MIFPE Fellowship. And if you just look up DOI Fellowship Programs, you'll see those at the Fish and Wildlife Service. We also have the Directorate Fellows Program, where they take cohorts every year. All great opportunities. So I think we'll wrap it up there. Thank you so much for listening. If you're interested in finding out any more about the policies we talked about, you can just Google search the White House NBS Roadmap or the DOI NBS Roadmap, and they'll pop right up. They're public documents. There's nothing secret here. And y'all have a wonderful day, night, afternoon, whatever time it is where you're listening. Lyric, Matthias, anything to wrap up?
No, thanks for listening.
Thanks for this opportunity.
Thank you for listening to the National Conservation Training Center podcast series. If you have feedback, thoughts, or stories you'd like to share, contact us at nctc_podcast@fws.gov.